Hi, this is Catherine McNamara, and you're listening to My Dad on All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
Joining me is a business tycoon. He used to be an F-18 fighter pilot. Now he's a business tycoon. Two-thirds of the earth is covered by water. The other third financially covered by Kurt Knowles. You know him as F-18 man. It's one continuum, man. When you're a fighter pilot, you just cannot stop achieving in life. So he joins us now. What's up, man? How are business tycoon, F-18 pilot? What's going on?
Well, first of all, what an experience to come out here and be with everybody again that we were in Afghanistan with. Hasn't that been just an absolutely epic 24 hours already, just seeing these guys? And I think your analogy of the old catcher's mitt is perfect. It's just, I mean, seeing Gunner and Brock and Joe and General Furness and Sergeant Major Zikafus. I mean, it just feels like we were with them yesterday. I mean, it's just been an awesome, awesome experience. I'm excited for today to be a part of watching General Furness take over 2nd Marine Division. It'll be like you said, what a piece of history. You know, it's like you got General Lejeune, and then down their list is General Furness. So
yeah, pretty cool.
That is really amazing.
On a serious note, I want to ask you about the experience was different for you and another friend of ours, Metro, call sign Metro, Rich Elaine. You would talk about your combat tours, and I mean, so when you hooked up with us, I mean, you were going to see the world from the war from certainly a different perspective.
Well, when I deployed in 07, for almost that whole year off to Stennis and flying combat
missions.
Put
that just a little bit closer.
How's that? Does that sound
better? There you go. Sounds more manly. Not that you need any help with that,
hey,
but I'm just calling. I'm trying to be a bro.
Who took you to the gym this morning?
You did. You did.
Let's go. No, you know, when I flew off to Stennis in 07, almost that whole year, and I learned a lot as a person, as an aviator, of how to take a breath. And, you know, I think I had a tendency to want to accomplish everything. And you know, I think as a Marine and especially a pointy nose guy, you want to do the right thing. And sometimes you get a little too far over your skis. So I think what I learned was a little bit of patience. Actually, a lot of patience that applied well when we got to Afghanistan and I was on the ground with you guys. It was the ability to look at a situation and go, let's take a breath here. And there's mistakes that I made in 07 flying that I applied those lessons learned. And I think we saved lives appropriately. And we did a good job of analyzing some things and making the right decisions and we were in Afghanistan and controlling the air from the ground. And I mean, that was a high pace, high tempo year that we had there of running, you know, got thousands of medevacs and close air support strikes and support lifts. I mean, you just think about how much we did. It's like, you know, when you're doing thousands of stuff and you lose count, you know, it's amazing, you know, electronic warfare we controlled. And but we were always leaning in and trying to either do it better or find a kind of a new innovative way. And I think to Metro's credit, he's very good at thinking outside the box and let's try this technique or this tactic. And he, I think, did an excellent job of bridging the gap with not only other services but other countries. I mean, we were using the UK for a lot of our what they have these capabilities of using radar off their helicopters and scanning the ground, and we were able to use them and then bring them into our situational awareness of...
No, that's the wrong question. How did it look different? Now you're an infantry guy. You just got attached to, you know, you were looking at it at, what, 10,000 feet and from up in the air and moving fast. Now you're looking at it at the speed of a boot. What was that like? I mean, personally, it's a very different experience, a different culture. What was that like?
Well, I think it was a team atmosphere. Was much more prevalent with you all in the infantry. It was, you had to be successful as a team to make the mission successful. Whereas a pilot, you're either by yourself or you're with a wingman, and it's just, you know, one or two of you making this successful. But as the whole team, you know, you've got to make sure everybody's doing their thing, staying in their lane, but supporting each other constantly. And if somebody starts to lose focus, I think you either help guide them back or you try to step in and take off that stress. But what made us successful, I think, was the team, right, and how many people we had with us. That it was it's much more of a team fight than an individual fight.
So you show up, right? You get all your cool hooky-roo gear, right? You try to watch what the way the gunner arranges his, and then you copy him because you're a high-speed guy.
No, we literally were like taking pictures of how the gunner had his vest set up and his weapon set up.
Because he's like, truth be told, he's like the cool guy, right?
No, so he is.
If you copy him, you're in the five ring, right?
No, I remember. I'm like, I got to make sure my weapon's dialed in. He's like, all right, let's go. And he takes me out to this range in Afghanistan, and, you know, he just pulls out, you know, cracks open a box, hands me a bunch of rounds, and he's like, all right, here's what I want you to do. And bang, bang, bang. And he looks at me and goes, you're good. That was all. He's like, all right.
But that's the BZO. There's other parts of the weapon. It's got to look cool, right?
Well, he's got all the whiz-bang stuff on
exactly.
His – yeah, yeah, he knows. But the thing with him is he not only does he know what should be on there, but also what's the most applicable for you, you know what I mean? He's not going to have you put on something that doesn't
– Yeah, but you would put something because you're an aviator. You guys got to look good. You would put something on that you really don't need. It's not applicable to you, but I got to have that. That looks too cool. Because cool weapons, are you rolling out the cool weapons? You must be a baller, right?
Well, no, the radios are what we had all the cool gear. Remember, we had all the headsets, and you know, that's our, you know, we had nice weapons, but our radios are what was really our true weapon.
Give me a couple things that surprised you. So you come to the grunts. Had you ever been a FAC before?
No.
So this is your first experience. So a couple of things that surprised you. You join all these knuckle draggers. You're a fighter pilot. It's not like you're some other kind of pilot. You're not like a helo guy. So you're a high speed dude, and you roll into the grunts. And give me a couple things, a couple of observations as you join. As you,
I was surprised at how quickly you could be faced with danger. And why I say that is, you as a pilot, I think you're kind of removed from the direct fight,
mm-hmm.
and it doesn't, you know, you don't have to put yourself out there very far, and you are in close proximity of the enemy. And, you know, the times that I went outside the wire and we were, you know, doing patrolling, or, you know, we would go out and we would basically do what I would call, like, you know, an assist or a site survey with different, you know, facts and stuff. We'd go and see what they or how they're doing their tactics, what they need for support. You know, you're outside, and it's like that's the enemy's right there. I mean, it's like you are right there. So,
Hello.
Yeah. Yeah. It gets real, real quick. So, but I still vividly remember one time I was bouncing along in a vehicle and you hear bang, 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 bang. And I'm like, are we getting shot at? And it's like, no, sir, that's the Afghan children are throwing rocks at us.
Like, that one place.
Yeah,
they would throw. Yeah, there's this one stretch kind of between Marja and the river.
Yep.
And
yep.
For whatever reason, these kids would be bombing vehicles
with rocks.
With
it rocks. Sound like dang, like you're getting shot at. It's like dang, 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 bang, bang. No. So,
give me another one. So, okay, so proximity to danger, that's one. Give me another one.
I would say the other thing that was different about that kind of, you know, especially that situation was just how much you felt like you were the tip of the spear, trying out new tactics, you know, working with different agencies. I just felt like we had a wide palette to paint, but stay within your lines too. You know what I mean? It's
right,
like,
right. Were you with the gunner when he was his C-130 story? Were you in on that aircraft or not?
No. I've been on that C-130.
I thought you were on that one.
I wasn't on that one, but I've ridden with them and did some close air support with them in that amazing asset, the Harvest Hawk. That thing is awesome.
The double H.
Yeah.
The Harvest Hawk. No, Mike was telling that story yesterday. It's an awesome story. All right, let's talk about your business and now being a business tycoon, taking over San Marcos. For those of you, when you see the Knowles Center in San Marcos, Beyonce didn't build that thing, okay? Just so you know, just for the record. So, I forgot. Oh, Jacksonville, North Carolina. You like North Carolina? You don't like it? Talk to me.
You know, the South is an acquired taste.
Kind of like scotch?
Yeah. I think some people like scotch and some people like beer. Yeah. But, you know, I lived here for 2 years. I was stationed at Cherry Point as an instructor pilot and lived up just in the north here. And there are some beautiful parts and people love it here. I just, you know, for me personally, I'm a West Coast guy. You know, I like that. Kind of the West Coast pace. I like the people out on the West Coast. I just think I kind of, you know, tend to kind of lean more towards how they, you know, live their lives. And I think the kind of the pace and the atmosphere out there is just, and then obviously, of course, too, the, you know, it's flat here. It's green, but it's flat. You know, I kind of the rolling hills and the mountains of the West Coast.
Rudy had a lot of problems navigating last night. For some reason.
Like, it's a lot
we
of strip
drove
malls
through,
around here.
To get to our hotel, we drove through like 14 parking lots. And if it hadn't been for the fact that the gunner and I were arguing, we would have, like, annihilated him.
You guys were like two brothers in the car, and you got so mad at each other, you just stopped talking.
Yeah, we stopped. And then we didn't even abuse Rudy for getting lost and then driving through, like, seven parking lots. Like, what? Like, I can.
Yeah, but we never had to turn around.
I can see the hotel on the horizon. Can't we get to a street?
There's certain guy rules when it comes to vehicles. One is you never mess with another man's vehicle. You don't touch it.
Yeah.
You don't touch it. The other one is you never turn around. You cannot turn around. It is, you go
mean,
one
not
way.
Not like in the seat, but like, you mean you cannot do a U-turn.
You cannot do, when the moment Cindy tells me to turn around, I feel like
that's
you just fumbled on the football field. Like, you do not turn around. Like,
so as long as you're going left and right and you're...
Yes.
So how about if you made two consecutive lefts and are kind of going back?
That's okay. That's approved. It gets do it, but you just can't do the official U-turn because that admits failure.
Capitulation.
That you've lost situational awareness. Man, it's raining outside. We're going to...
Oh, man.
I hope we don't have to
Where the hell were we? We were in Alabama. It came down. Yeah, the East Coast rain comes out, you know, it comes out, and then it just cuts loose with those heavy drops
that we
don't get in California.
No, I can see it right now.
Yeah.
Hopefully, the change of command is going to be outside still.
Yeah, well, they got all the... We drove by a little bit ago. They got the tanks. They got the RD guys out there. They've got the... LAVs, some trucks.
I know. When the generals have their thing, I love it when the 105s launch off.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, they were shooting last night while we were in General Furness's backyard. And I talked to his brother, who's a lobbyist. and they were shooting artillery someplace.
Yeah, that's awesome.
And it fired. I said, you know what? I love that sound.
Oh, that's awesome.
And his girlfriend said, it's making me nervous. I don't really like it. It's the sound of freedom.
Exactly.
You'll learn to love it.
As the Osprey goes right over to the house.
Yeah. So it's like my mom, like, rocking my cradle, the sound of artillery. She looked at me like, really? We went to the gym, and let me give you an observation. The girls in the gym weren't doing girl stuff. They were there to get rocked up, and I don't know. It wasn't real busy in there, but maybe there might have been four or five women that came in there, and they were like bench pressing.
Oh, they were killing it,
right?
They were killing it.
Is that just me, or did you notice that?
No, I noticed that too. I think there's I would say, you know, I think back in the day, we used to go to a military gym and you'd see a couple, you know, kind of a little bit of kind of just some like basics and, you know, more like aerobic type of exercise. But,
right.
You know, people were in there killing it this morning. So male, female, they were hitting it. So.
All right. So so the change of command tonight, are you looking for anything in particular?
I'm hoping the weather holds up is what I'm
so
really
that's your big,
yeah,
your
that's
big,
my big,
your big
concern.
Your big question mark is the weather?
Although I got pushed to tent 7.
I noticed that.
Yeah.
I was going to ask you about that.
Yeah,
I'm
tent 6.
Yeah, I'm in tent 6, row 1.
Yeah, see, you're high pry.
That is.
Yeah.
If you, actually, Mike and I were looking at the list because they attached it. So it's a seating chart. All right, well, he's sitting here, he's sitting there, Mac's sitting there, Gunner's sitting there. Rudy's in we're all in tent 6. Rudy's in tent 7. But in fairness, you did RSVP late.
I did. I think that might have been the factor. But you know,
so if you would have RSVP'd early and gotten tent 7, it would have been like, yeah, you're on the outside.
Well, you know what I'll do is I'll just crash tent 6. Just keep an eye open for open seats.
Strict enforcement of tent codes. Just so you know, I will be the tent Nazi. Hey,
he's not.
He's in tent 7. Get him.
He's not supposed to be in tent 6.
Yeah. Tell him to put his retiree ID card away. Nobody cares about that thing.
The guy in the gray suit is tent 7.
He's a tent 7 guy. I demand my respect. All right. So. We'll talk about the business now. You're a little bit of become an entrepreneur now that you got out of, and then we need to talk about your colonoscopy one more time, and then we'll talk about your fascination with the whole mule and the explanation of what a mule is. So we'll go down that road a little bit. So being an entrepreneur, is that something that comes naturally? Was your dad an entrepreneur? You know?
Well, my dad did start his own business, real small construction company. I think I learned a little bit of little soft lessons from him, but I think as a undergraduate business major and then, you know, dabbled with my MBA at Manchester Business School, and I think, to be honest, to be around Cindy, who's a finance major, and she's always forward.
Wait a minute, what is dabbled with my MBA?
I didn't finish it.
Oh, is that like Colonel Select? Is that the same
thing?
That's
basically about the same thing, yeah.
Would it really mean?
Yeah, one year complete, one year to go kind of thing, yeah.
Okay. I'm just talking.
But, you know, pace in the Marine Corps, it takes you away from the study sometimes. But
Pua?
Yeah. being around Cindy and, you know, her support and saying, go try this, and then my partner, Nick Deedy, who, you know, played – you know, essentially professional level soccer, and we built this Momentum Training Center soccer facility in San Marcos.
Well, you've been coaching soccer for a long. How many years?
Oh, probably over 10. Probably total, like 12 years total coaching. But
right, and you don't coach like toddler kids and rec league stuff. You coach competitive soccer.
Yeah, I probably like last 6 years have been high level competitive. I've had right now. You know, you got high school age girls, and then I've had, you know, younger girls, and it's been primarily, to be honest with you, it's a lot of girls, female athletes. But, you know, I think that what we've noticed is females tend to focus on one sport specific earlier than guys do. And
there's a lot of that with guys, though.
Yeah.
I mean,
but, you know, you play competitive soccer, you're playing year-round. I mean,
especially on the coast. I mean, we're talking about being in a small town. In a small town, you got to play on most of the sports.
Yeah.
Because if you don't, we don't have a team.
That's right.
Hey, go get Stumpy. He's got to play right field this year.
Yeah, yeah.
come on, I don't want to play. Yeah, well, so-and-so, he can't play this year, so you got to play. Why can't he play? Oh, he's in jail, and so we can't get him out. But on the in a big city, given the competitive nature of a lot of schools, you see kids focus on play one sport and focus on that sport year-round.
No, I think it's very valid because you've got so many kids, it's like to try and get play time, you've got to focus on that sport. You've got to try to, these kids are they're going to training centers to get fat, bigger, faster, stronger. Then they're hiring private trainers to get, better technical skills. They've got, psychological trainers. I mean, there's just this whole, crazy, what holistic approach to try and build these athletes just to get, either make the varsity team or make the highest level club team or whatever.
Somebody said last night that 1,000 kids tried out for a soccer team, or was it 100, or what did they say? Did you hear that at some high school? Like, for instance, they have.
I've seen one team have over 100 kids try out for basically like 20 spots. Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody plays soccer, and then you have the football team. You have 40 guys trying out for 50 slots.
Yeah.
And the number's dwindling there, but soccer not that way. Tell us about momentum. How did you conceive it, and what does it do?
Well, momentum. When I would deploy. I would, my daughter who plays competitive soccer, I would work with a trainer.
She wants a motorcycle, by the way. Just a little insight into Kurt's parenting issues.
I know.
First car, Dad, I want a motorcycle.
That's the kind of girl she is. Yeah. Yeah. So, what's your kid want for their first car? A motorcycle? Yeah.
Oh, she wants a Volkswagen convertible. What's yours want? She wants a Kawasaki.
Yeah, she wants a
Nighthawk.
What's a crotch rocket?
Nice.
So when I would deploy, Brianna would often train with a guy named Nick Deedy, who's just an amazing coach. And then when I would deploy, I would contract him to coach the teams that I was coaching currently, so that the girls still had good continuity and good coaching. Well, Nick's and I had been talking over the last few years about, what would you think about opening our own training center? And we just said, let's do it. Let's just do this. And we found the right location right on the border of San Marcos and Carlsbad and right next to La Casa in an area called San Leo Hills. And the Momentum Training Center was built to focus on the soccer athlete at any skill level. It can be in any age. When we train from 2 years old up to 72 years old and any skill level, a recreation player all the way up till we've trained college up there. And Nick is really the backbone to it and its success because people want to be Nick. I mean, he can watch him play and move and juggle and manipulate the ball. I mean, it's eye-watering. And he's a great role model for these young athletes, and we've built something very special. But we're branching out to push the athlete even further than any other training center has. So we have yoga there, so that the athlete can get yoga and injury prevention type stuff.
Yoga's pretty much a part and become mainstream, at least in California.
Oh yeah, it's
pretty
huge.
Mainstream in terms of physical training.
Oh, it's from an injury prevention and especially with the high rate of ACL injuries, especially with young female athletes, the way their anatomy is, they've got to get more flexibility. They've got to get better knee strength if they're going to tear that ACL, especially in soccer or lacrosse. Well, then recently we've also, and again to Cindy's credit, is...
Okay, explain to everybody who Cindy is.
My wife, who's vice president of a major company in the United States.
A little background. Cindy was what? She was valedictorian?
Yeah.
At the University...
Of Illinois.
Of Illinois.
Yeah, her name is...
That's not like University of Illinois, like... Whatever, Carbondale, right, whatever, University of South Illinois, Saluki, whatever that thing is. This is the University of Illinois.
Yeah, yeah. So she's on what's called the bronze tablet. So her name is etched in bronze, in the library. But what's crazy is Her dad did it. So
her dad engraved your name on the bronze?
No, her dad's name is on there.
Oh.
He did it. And then just recently, her niece did it. So yeah, there's three generations.
The secret handshake.
I guess, yes. They know the bronze tablet secret handshake. So they're all, that's, yeah. Needless to say, that family does not mess around as far as academics.
Were you academically?
For me?
Yeah.
Oh, that's, yeah. I was solid
in college. I was solid like 289.
Yeah.
With a lot of personality.
I struggled in high school, but I think it was from focus. In college, I was like 3.0-ish, 2.9, you know?
You struggled in high school? You think it was focus?
Oh, God.
High school's not very hard, so...
I was worried about lifeguarding and playing football and working out. And academics.
So you're a relatively shallow kid?
I just had other interests.
Is that how we talk about it now? Other interests?
Yes.
Okay. So it sounds superficial, though.
Yeah.
Did you read any books when you were a kid?
No.
Or were you more like a picture guy?
I think I was more of a touch guy. I'm a touchy type.
Really?
Yeah, touchy type of learner.
All
yeah.
Right. Just stay away from me. I don't like hugging people.
I know you do. You have that phobia.
I don't like. Why do you want to hug me? Like, we'll shake hands.
I got the bro hug from Zuckerfush yesterday, though.
Yeah, he's a hugger.
Yeah.
He's a hugger. He's a hugger. Mike's a hugger. You're a hugger. Now that I know you're a toucher, man, I won't even
bother. I'll probably wave
at you across the room. Hey, bro, what's up?
You look out. I'm going to get on a wrap you in a hug. Bring it in here for the real thing.
Right.
So Cindy, Cindy, you know, finance major and has done very well in her career. And so she really has pushed the envelope of me starting these businesses, and then also what can you do at Momentum to do that's different than other training centers. And one thing she's come up with recently, you know, there's a high level of sex trafficking going on in Southern California because they're grabbing these, you know, teenage girls.
I mean, all over the country. I mean,
yeah.
When you look at that and you're like, are you kidding me? Like, I thought that only went on in third world countries.
I know. You think it's in your backyard, and they're grabbing these girls, and they're running them across the border and selling them. And so what we're looking to do at Momentum is start the self-awareness and initial self-defense type of classes for teenage girls to basically – you know, and Gunner's already doing it for women. He's doing these self-awareness classes of just have situational awareness, whether you're going to the grocery store or, you know, look to your left and right and not be heads down on your phone. Is somebody watching you? And I'm not talking about the weird guy that's just staring at you. It's the dude that you might not think is watching you, who he's actually waiting for you to go back to your car. And then he's going to come in from behind and shove you into the car. You know, and for these, what we want to do at Momentum Training Center is teach these girls about know your surroundings. And if you do get grabbed or you know, how can you break contact? And I love the way Gunner says is time, space, distance. You need to build time, space, distance away from these predators that are trying to grab you and get you and that's what we're going to do at Momentum Training Center. We're going to start these courses on Sundays to teach these, you know, young ladies how to create time, space, distance. And if you do get grabbed, we'll give you some basics of how to hopefully break contact to once again build time, space, distance. So, and I'm hoping to bring Gunner and his tutelage into Momentum as well to help because I think he's going to bring he'll do great. But we're working.
You know, when you hear him talk about. He started, I think, through his church, started teaching a group of women. And, you know, the stuff that they say about how they become more confident about, you know, being someplace and what to look for and things like that. And, you know, he'll on occasion when, you know, I'll say, what are you doing? He'll say, oh, I'm going out and we're teaching this. So how's it going? And he'll say, oh, you know, I one of my students, you know, told me this. And it's like, you know, it's just – makes your heart feel good.
No, he told me a story about he had a husband say, my wife, we walk in a restaurant, she's like, no, we're not going to sit there, we're going to sit over here. He's like, why are we moving over here? Because we need to be able to scan the restaurant so that if something happens, we can go out this way. You know, it's cracking me up. But, you know, he's great like that. And, you know, I love the
way. You know, but, I mean, you read these stories now where, you know, patrons are shooting people that walked in with, where was that one, in Kentucky a month ago, where the two guys were either in the parking lot or ran to their cars, got weapons out of their cars and shot and killed the guy who had showed up, and he shot the mother and he shot the daughter or something like that.
Wow.
And then two, I mean, you read those stories and it's not, you know, we all like to say, well, you know, come on, what are the odds of that happening? But it happens more and more around the country.
Well, what the one I love that he talks about is when he, the single, you know, Gunner says he's watching this attractive, you know, he could tell she was a single mother and she's wrestling, you know, like a 2-year-old and a 5-year-old. One's on her hip, one's, you know, running around, and she leaves her shopping cart like 5 times trying to catch the 5-year-old. And he just couldn't take it anymore. He came up to her. He's like, look, I'm not trying to come on to you. I'm not trying to, I just want you to know, like, what I'm observing. Like, you know, he's like, can I just ask you some questions? She's, and I guess she was like, yeah, I was like, go ahead. And he's like, you're a single mom, right? And she's like, how did you know? And he's like, just bear with me. You know, and he starts telling her, like, I've watched you walk away from your shopping cart and your purse 5 times. He's like, I watched you, you know, have your back to me as a stranger, you know, multiple times. Like, he's like laying it out. Like, do you know how vulnerable you were making yourself and you don't even realize it? And it's like, she was just like, whoa, how did no one's ever told me this kind of stuff? You know? And it's just like, look,
she didn't like, yo, why are you stalking me, creep?
No, I just think it's fantastic. It's like fantastic.
Right.
Build situational awareness to these ladies. If we can protect and help, you know, these women from possibly getting in a bad situation by building situational awareness, and now looking to implement at Momentum Training Center in conjunction with our soccer training and our yoga and our fitness, and I want to help. I just want to help. I think what Momentum's about is build people to be better people and, you know, live better lives, you know. So that's what Momentum Training Center is all about.
All right. So people that are listening, a lot of people have ideas for starting businesses. Give me a couple lessons learned from starting business.
It's a lot like construction. I think we underestimated the startup costs.
Talk about you. You did construction, yes?
With my dad, but I think I've been around it. We've remodeled our house multiple times. I think you think it's going to cost X amount of dollars for your remodel, and I would just add 30%, maybe even 50%. I think starting a business. Oh yeah, well, it's been. I mean, we got a business loan. I mean, it's, you know, it's like we thought, oh, this will be plenty. Like, it went pretty quick. You know, it's like your startup costs will take a major hit on getting a business running, especially when you're open to something like a facility or something that's got, you know, a lot of equipment you're trying to buy, and you just need to plan for those first couple of years of, you know, maybe you're not going to make anything into the profit, you know, and so you've got to plan for that. So the initial startup costs have been higher than we anticipated. But we're, you know, working hard to hopefully overcome that and get the business to be successful. The other thing is advertising.
So what's the lesson out of that? The lesson is whatever you believe your startup costs.
Add 30%. I absolutely would.
Okay. All right. Let me ask you this. Also, when you started up, how long did it take you to begin to course correct? Because there's certain things that you say, okay, this is going to be included in what we start with. And then all of a sudden you're 60 days into it, revenue isn't here, revenue's there. How long, you know, but it's like, I don't want to give up on the model yet. So before we tweak, how soon do you tweak?
Well, we knew starting this thing that we Nick and I both looked at each other and we said, you know, there's going to be things that we think are going to be successful that aren't, and there's going to be things that we never had an idea would be successful and that are. I would say that we are constantly analyzing that. For us, the young ones, the you know, little peewees, the ages 3 to 5, I think is more successful than we had thought. People want their kids to get exercise. They want their young ones to come down there and train for an hour and get some physical fitness. So that's been more successful than I think we anticipated. Club loyalty. And what I would consider to be like paranoia, like they think that we're recruiting when we're not. We're a club neutral, you know, facility where it doesn't matter what club you play for or what what skill level you're at. We're just here to make you a better person and a better player. And I think clubs are having a hard time believing that. And
oh, really?
Oh, yeah. We have clubs that have absolutely said that they're not going to train at our facility because I think they're afraid that we're, you know, in bed with another club or recruiting with for other clubs
that
and we're not.
That crazy competitive?
Oh, it's that.
So if I wanted my kid to train at your place, the soccer club would say, hey, we don't really like those guys because they're recruiting or in cahoots with this club.
That's right.
We'd prefer
which is the furthest thing from the truth.
So the important place to be relative to a business in your business is to be neutral.
Oh, absolutely. Be neutral, and we are.
Do you fly like a Swiss flag out in front of the like?
We don't fly any flag.
Oh.
That's exactly. We fly the momentum flag. Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. We don't hang any club affiliations. You know, and we welcome anybody to come. And you know, I don't talk about teams that I've coached in the past. There, I mean, we try to keep it neutral. And I want the athlete to feel unpressured both from a coaching perspective but also from a club perspective. They need to feel comfortable and they can try new things and they're not being analyzed, they're not being critiqued because they're not trying to make a team. We're just there to be a better athlete and a better person. So that's been a hurdle for us that I think we didn't anticipate is just continuing to try to convey that we are a club neutral facility. Another probably big lesson is that we thought, you know, we've got 4 to 5 yoga instructors and at our yoga center and our yoga studio,
which is huge all over the country. Yoga.
Yeah.
Right?
And we thought the hairdresser mentality would take off.
What does that mean?
The hairdresser moves from one place to another and the clients follow. Right. Well, it didn't happen. Right. That we've got amazing yoga instructors, and we just haven't seen their clients that they train at those other studios follow them to our studio. So we're having to build those clients from scratch. And I think Nick and I both assume that the hairdresser mentality where the yoga instructor would leave one studio and everybody would just follow them to our studio, it hasn't been. We do a very unique type of training there called flow lift, which is essentially a high intensity yoga where you're wearing ankle weights and hand weights. And it's, if you Google flow lift, it's all over. And it's only done at a couple of facilities around the country.
Do you flow lift?
Oh yeah. It's
what kind of lifting were you doing this morning?
That was more kind of like what I would consider to be high impact, weight training. So I try to get my heart rate up, and then continuing, I never stop moving. So, you know, I'm using resistance with weights, but then I'm, you know, I'll jump on a cardio machine to get my heart rate back up again, and then I'll go do more weights and back on, you know. So I try to keep my heart rate going, so that I'm burning more calories. You know, if I got 45 minutes to an hour, I try to keep the intensity up in the workout. Flow lift, though, is like no other. I mean, you are literally like you're trembling and you are shaking because your body's working so hard, and it's not holding poses. Like you're constantly moving and flowing with resistance, and your core and your legs, I mean, your back, it's just everything's engaged constantly. It is unreal. A great workout.
So when we read articles, like I know I've seen them in Men's Fitness, you can get more out of a 15-minute workout than you can in 60 minutes to the gym. What we're talking about is for those 15 minutes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, flow lift, you can do a 45-minute flow lift session, and you will be – I mean, I'm sweating so bad, you go bend down, your hands are like sliding on the mat.
Right.
I mean, you're just dripping in sweat.
But that's
the
kind
amazing.
Of tempo that you're talking about in back-to-back-to-back work.
Yeah.
Work, you know, I think traditionally – in fact, what I did today was traditional – guy goes to the gym and you lift weights. You're doing sets and you're moving
traditional
from apparatus.
Strength training,
you're doing from apparatus, and you're going to take 60 to 90 seconds between sets. Where what you're talking about is that 60 to 90 seconds, there's another lift,
that's
there's
right.
another movement,
yep.
right? Whether it's a core movement, so that you're not, you know, kind of competing with the
yep.
same muscle group.
That's exactly right.
Right. There, so anyway, so a little bit different. I like the more traditional approach.
Yeah, but I think you will find that your body will tighten up and change and lean down if you do other things in between your rest periods. You know, so let's say you're doing a chest day and you're going to do traditional right. bench pressing. Well, instead of just sitting on the bench and staring at your clock or staring at TV, go do a set of abs.
If you're staring at your phone?
That doesn't count.
Unless
you're going to change stations on your Pandora so you can get some more high intensity music. Yeah,
I know you are having some Pandora issues though.
I know that,
in the car.
The out here in North Carolina we don't get very good signal, so even my cell phone and Wi-Fi is not the best.
So
especially on bases.
So your Pandora malfunctioned? Because
I had to go
bad
to
connection.
Well, I just had to turn off Pandora today in the gym. I was just using my music that I have reserved on my phone.
Okay, let's talk about your little earbud things you wear. I've never seen those like that. Little inside the ear, no major antenna, no cord or anything like that.
That's right. They're wireless Bluetooth earphones that slide in your ear. Right, and they're hooked up wirelessly, so you can leave your phone like down on the ground, or you know, and you're moving around.
Did you see that Mike Gunner had them, and so you got those?
Is that what does Gunner have them? He's got the wireless Bluetooth.
Cool. I don't know. I was just asking. Cool guy gear.
It is pretty cool. I got them, and I was hesitant, but now I really love them. I do, and they're great. And the new iPhones don't even have this traditional like headphone jack. Right, like they almost encourage the Bluetooth headsets.
So
earbuds.
Do they sound good?
They
would
sound
you recommend
great.
It? So what's the name of them?
The ones I have are Jabra.
Jabra,
mm-hmm.
And they're little I don't know. They look kind of triangular ear shaped things that go into your ear.
Yeah.
And do they stay in well when you're working out?
Oh yeah, you can run. I run with them. No problem.
Okay.
The great mic. So I can just push the button. If a phone rings, I push the button, boom.
Boom.
And I'm talking. And it's
okay, what about cost? Something that small normally is relatively expensive.
It was kind of like a package deal when I got the new iPhone. So, yeah.
iPhones. Communism. Communism.
Apple, separate world.
Yeah, that came. So I don't know what they cost. I mean, you know, I don't think – I mentioned you could get them for $200 to $300. Yeah. I don't think they're
not. That's not cheap.
Well,
I normally can get a wire set for like $9.95.
They're going to sound like crap, though.
So if I want to go hands-free, Bluetooth inside the ear.
Yeah.
Two to three?
I would say
skills.
Probably, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, probably in that range.
Right. So would I get a discount if I said, hey, I heard Kurt Knowles talking about this? Momentum Training?
Momentum Training Center? Maybe we should start selling them.
Yeah, put Momentum in the coupon code and see what happens. Let's see. What else? We talked about we were going to talk about – there's two things we were going to talk about. What were they? I brought them up a few minutes ago.
You said colonoscopy.
Colonoscopy. Now, you had a colonoscopy that is one of, like, the high watermarks of All Marine Radio because your post-colonoscopy – euphoria as you were driving up the 5? Were you driving? You guys were
on
vacation.
I was on the 5.
You were on vacation.
On the 5. I think I was going. I thought I was going to work up to the John Wayne Airport.
No, I thought you. Cindy and the kids were in the car. You were going on vacation. No.
No, I was by myself.
Oh. Oh. Wow.
I remember I was going through Camp Pendleton.
So why were you so fired up? So was the haunting specter of colon cancer? Had you waited too long to get this? Do you have a history of internal cancers in your family? Explain to you, was it just like near-death euphoria that you experienced? Because my dogs get that. Like, when they have a near-death experience, like Jack had one. In fact, Luke, he's Napa man. Montana man is, somebody sent me an email. Hey, all you guys, there's one exception, okay? Montana man. So we're going to take away his name for a while. We're going to have Montana Man. Yeah, Montana Man.
Because he didn't make it out here?
Well, he's kind of a – Montana Man is kind of a butch name, right?
He's a tough guy, though.
Yeah. Well, but he's got to pay. Everybody has to pay, right? So we're going to have another name. I don't know. Maybe Cookie for a while, something.
Cookie would fit because he's in Montana, kind of like it's like the chef. You know what I mean? Although he's a good chef. You know, he's like,
but you
he's
don't
like an
remember
amazing...
Cookie wasn't like Montana Man goes out on the range and rides. He looks like the Marlboro Man kind of thing. I'm not saying that
Cookie's
Schwartz
back,
look like
back with the gear.
He's in the rear of the gear.
in the rear of the gear.
And he belongs here today. This is his appointed place of duty, and he's not going to be here. So, and because he's going to a concert with his sister.
What?
So, Cookie, enjoy the concert. So, anyway, so we're setting up your – so do you did your family have a history of internal cancers or what?
Yeah, well, both my grandfather and my dad had bad prostate cancer, right? So I've actually been on that high radar for a while as far as high risk. And every time I had to get the flight physical, you know, they do the PSA, which now, there's like – you know, there's reports out now that the PSA isn't the best, you know, read. And
what?
Oh, yeah. So here's what it is, and I'll just make it as simple as I can. So your PSA can be elevated, right? And but it doesn't necessarily mean you have prostate cancer.
This is the men's health segment of the program.
Yeah, and if you have – let's say you do have prostate cancer, it might not be the right – what they're finding is it might not be the right decision to do anything about it. Like they literally – going in there and cutting things out and giving you a bunch of treatment, like they've actually found that the repercussions of that could have been worse if you just had done nothing.
You know, my former father-in-law, if I get divorced, is he not my father-in-law anymore? How do I?
It's an honorary title.
It becomes an honorary? Okay.
Yeah.
I like that. My father-in-law, God rest his soul, was a urologist, and he used to make that argument 20 or 30 years ago. What do you do if you have prostate cancer? And his nothing.
Yeah, well, it may
ultimately claim your life, but I can tell you this, that what you're going to go through if you have your parts of your prostate removed or whatnot, the radiation and whatnot, you know, and look at on the average how long those guys live, and then look on the average of how long that people that don't do anything have, and you'll see the number is remarkably close.
Well, I just say, let's say I got
it. Quality of life is different.
Let's say I got it. You know,
got what?
Let's say hypothetically speaking, I got prostate cancer.
Okay.
Then
you can see the underlying. That's the reason for the post near death euphoria.
I'll get to the colonoscopy in a minute, but
I don't care about the colonoscopy. I want to know about why you.
Well,
so
let's say I got prostate cancer,
okay.
And I sat with the urologist, whoever the case may be, and I said, and they said, look, here's your option A, we can do treatment, or option B, we do nothing. Like, I think it would be a hard decision. Like, what do you do? But now there's some theory that nothing might be the right answer, kind of like your father-in-law said, you know, and depending, I imagine, on the severity and what, you know, how bad it's infected. So, but my dad.
And the rate of growth of all
which is
very, very difficult to predict.
Yeah. My dad and my grandfather both did treatments and ended up, you know, my dad's still around and in mid 70s and he's doing pretty well. My grandfather made it to his 90s. So, I mean, and they took action. So I, you know, just got to look at it on a case by case basis. But I will say, in talking to doctors even this week as I was getting my physical, we'll do the PSA, but it doesn't mean that if you have elevated counts that, one, you have cancer, two, we're going to do anything about it, you know? And I'm like, okay, well, at least I know if I'm elevated or not. The colonoscopy came about because my dad had colon cancer. So, again, I'm back on the high radar, high risk. But he recovered. They cut it early. But I was having some pains and not bleeding, but some pain down there, and I was like, am I getting it? And I just had this not a good feeling. So I went into the doctor, explained to them. They knew I was high risk for not only for prostate cancer but for the colon cancer, so they scheduled the colonoscopy, right? So, you know, the thing about a colonoscopy is everyone fears the cleanse, right? The day prior cleanse, right? And so I don't know
if that's true.
No, it wasn't.
Most guys fear the penetration.
No, I don't think everyone feels a cleanse.
Really?
Yeah. Have you had one?
Yes.
Yeah. The solution they give you is nasty.
My colon is like, it looks like chrome. Yeah. You could, like, have lunch on that thing. It's, like, smooth and clean. Yeah.
If
you're having lunch right now, sorry about that.
So I do the cleanse, and it actually, I was like, this isn't that bad. Like, it's like cleans you out, all right? Mm-hmm. And then I go in the next morning, Camp Pendleton, and Cindy drives me out there, and we do the colonoscopy, and it's fine. And then they come back, and they like, yeah, your colon's, like, perfect. I'm like, it just felt like, it was like this such a weight off my shoulder when you're expecting to hear something's there or wrong or, hey, we found something. He's like, you're perfect. I'm like,
yes.
So then we caught you not too long after that.
The day after, I think.
And you was still like higher than a kite.
Yeah, you know, what's funny is it's the weirdest thing is like mentally, like also my whole body just felt better. Like I'm like, the pains went away.
All boats rise.
I think it was all in my head. No, I don't know what it was, but I had this fear that I think I was getting colon cancer. And then when I think because my dad had it.
Right. All right, so we won't make fun of you as much now that we know that.
Yeah.
That we can understand that. All right. In about, like, a minute or two, explain your fascination with the mule and why Cookie has to explain, like, what a mule is.
I don't.
Because it is starting to irritate the gunner. Well, every time the mule comes up.
He had some out there, too. No. And when I was in Montana a couple weeks ago, he's got one out there. He's got.
Did he take you over and give you, like, a sit you down and TMI you, give you a class?
No, but he basically, he's got one of his interns. Is like, there's one that's out there that's kind of grumpy and high maintenance. It's a female. And he's like.
The mule or the intern?
No, the mule. Okay. The intern's, like, taking it as his project. But I just don't see, like. Either you have a horse or you have a donkey, right? So the horse, donkey, mule thing, like, what is the – I'm confused about who's – I think the mule's like the cross between is what I understand. Or is the mule – makes the – I don't know.
So the horse and the mule, they – the horse and the mule, like, they don't know. They're like, we don't mix like that. Like horses with horses, mules with mules.
Yeah.
Then they don't. They're animals, so they're just like whatever. It's all good.
But who makes the donkey?
The horse and the mule.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So how
did you get fascinated by this stuff?
I still can't. I don't understand who makes who. The horse makes the horse. The donkey makes. The
horse and the donkey, one night, when they loved each other very, very much, kind of like your mom.
Yeah, but does the horse and the mule...
Well, maybe on a night that they didn't really love each other,
does the horse
but
and the donkey make the mule?
Yes.
Oh, all right.
What?
I mean,
that?
I can't... But then, so I asked Rob, why? Why would you want to do this?
Because they were in love with each other.
No, he says because the mule's more... the mule can be... It's more of a pack, like a pack. It's like... Horse can be high maintenance and can wear out, whereas the mule can keep going. Is that right? Or the donkey can get going. Which one's not
well,
this one's
one
a stronger?
The one that's part horse would be a better hybrid.
Yeah, there's like you got the hybrid vehicle, right? Yeah. So Rob,
maybe that's how you should look at it. The hybrid. I have the hybrid.
That yeah.
The
so which one's the hybrid?
I don't know.
That's what I don't know either. See, I don't know. I don't know which one is the hybrid.
I think the mule is, Mike knows. I think the mule is, I think the mule's a hybrid.
Yeah.
I think the donkey's a donkey.
Yeah. The donkey.
But the mule is.
The hybrid.
It's a hybrid. Is there a redeeming quality with the mule?
That's what I'm saying. Rob knows. Like, he'll tell you that the mule is.
Cookie knows?
Yes. He knows. He will tell you, like, the mule, I think, has the stamina of the donkey, but some of the positive attributes to the horse.
Longer tail.
Or maybe it's the other way around. He needs to just call in and just tell us, because I don't know.
All right, we're going to take a break, and the gunner's going to join us. I already got an email this morning about the gunner. Mike's got to tell you, Mike, like, held court for an hour in a gas station outside of Huntsville, Alabama. It was awesome.
I see. He needs to talk.
It was like midnight too. It was like something. Crazy.
Well, then like other guys showed up too, right?
Yeah.
They heard about it.
Yeah, sheriff showed up. Cops showed up. Well, they were there at the start, and another sheriff showed up. So no, it was pretty funny. All right, we're gonna take a break. When we come back, Gunner's gonna join us. Rudy's gonna hang with us on an awesome Thursday. for all of us, our battle buddy and former commanding officer, Dave Furness, take command of the 2nd Marine, the storied 2nd Marine Division. Pretty cool. I mean, when you come here to Camp Lejeune, as Dolly Lejeune said it, now it's his daughter, right? She gets interviewed. You could look it up. Do you know you mispronounce your name? And she says,
oh, no.
And she's like in her 80s. I don't think I do. Well, they say your name is Lejeune. That isn't the way we said it. My daddy said Lejeune. And they're from Louisiana, so it's not like they speak English.
Lejeune.
Right?
Lejeune. Yeah. See, I always say Lejeune because it's just been with me for so long.
Oh, you're no. Yeah. And everybody says there's no R in that word. And I said, like, I agree. But my problem is now that I've seen his daughter say it,
yeah.
Like, I can't buy the argument, like, there's no R in it. Hey, shut up.
That's not how you say McNamara.
Yeah, it's not how you say it. You say McNamara? You say it McNamara? No, it's McNamara.
Yeah.
I almost screwed my own name up. And that's where you say it. Oh, is it Musselman? No, it's Musselman. So, anyway.
Although I get cannolis.
Kurt Knowles is, your family's listening today, too.
Yeah, yeah, it's been great.
Should we give a shout out to who's listening?
Well, I've got family in Texas that are on. I've got family in Nashville that's on. You know, my niece Peyton, she's listening. She's
hey, Peyton, what's up?
She's the singer, the country singer. Yeah, yeah. Look at Peyton Davis, the country singer. She's big. She's big deal.
Whoa. Hey, Peyton. That's how they say hi in the South. Hey.
And then my brother-in-law Harry, he's a doctor.
Harry.
And, Harry Young. Doctor in the Austin area, amazing guy, and his wife Julie.
All right, so all you Knowleses, stay tuned. More of a Kurt Knowles, Momentum Man, F-18 Man. He's got a lot of names. coming up next, right here on your home for this, Almarine Radio on their All Warrior Radio Network.